Hi, friend. Thanks so much for clicking play on this episode of the Jasmine Star Show today. I'm your host, Jasmine Star, and if you're new around here, welcome. I love connecting with like-minded business owners who are chasing their dreams and matching their actions to their ambitions. Hey, so if you are an action taker, dream maker, I am so happy you're here. In today's episode, well, I had a recording. And it was an interview with America's career coach, Ken Coleman. Now, together, we always aim to deliver the highest amount of value for listeners. And in this conversation, we got into the nitty-gritty details of where creativity comes from and asking if an artist can actually be an entrepreneur. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. We went there, spilling the tea. Now, we also focused on how to approach what Ken calls the wrestling match between the head and the heart when it comes to starting a business. Y'all, if y'all want some career coaching, I got some career coaching and I've been in the game over a decade. Ken is just that good. I cannot wait for you to hear this conversation. Let's dive in.
All right, Jasmine, this is so fun. I'm so excited to talk to you because we're going to talk about getting started today. And you help so many people get started now, which is what I love about your work. But I want to get your story, and I'm told that you were in law school, and I'm curious why you were in law school. Where did you think you were headed before you decided to go a different direction?
I think that was part of the problem, Ken. I was on a fast train to destination uncertain. All I knew is that I'm the daughter of an immigrant. I'm a first generation Latina, first generation college student, and first generation post grad. Wow. And so I thought that getting a Juris Doctorate was going to be a way to traverse socioeconomic standards. I thought this is how you get out of the barrio. This is how you support your family. And it was just as education was the passport. But if you don't know where you're going, you're already off on the wrong foot. And so that's how I ended up in law school. And that's how I ended up wildly unhappy in law school as well.
So how deep were you into it before you say, this isn't for me, I'm out?
I was a 1L, and when I was in college, my mother was diagnosed with brain cancer, and when I was during my first year of law school, she had a relapse of the brain cancer, and by this time, it had been an 8.5-year battle, and she had gone through chemotherapy and brain surgery, and it was then the doctors were like, we don't think that we're going to pursue any other options. And it was a very difficult time in our family. It was a very difficult time. My father is a pastor. And it's at this point in time where you feel as if, you know, the promises of God are questioned. They should never be. But in that moment, you just feel the fragility of life. And it was at that moment, my mom was 50 years old and I was 25. And it's at that time where you realize, you start asking yourself, you're having midlife crisis questions. What am I doing? Where am I going? What do I want? And the thing that I realized again and again was that every time my mom was hospitalized, we were having conversations not about the things that she had done. We were having conversations about things she had not done. And I was 25 years old, and I had to reckon with the idea that I was currently doing something that I didn't want to do and not giving space to the have-not-done opportunities. And it was then that I made the decision that I wanted to leave law school and try something new.
Oh, wow. Okay, so let's stay there. Do you have ideas at this point that you had entertained before, that childlike wonder, wondering, almost, you know, fantasizing about a different direction? Or do all of a sudden a bunch of things come flooding your way as a result of going, I'm 25, what do I want to do?
It was neither. Nothing came flooding my way. It was unfortunately not the Latina version of Noah. Yep. It was quite the opposite. It was kind of just like a search. I became nomadic in trying to figure out what it was I wanted to do. All I knew was that I was on a full ride scholarship to UCLA Law School, and part of the scholarship included campus housing in West Los Angeles, right by the Bel Air Gate. So it's one of the most expensive zip codes.
Beautiful area.
And I couldn't afford it because I didn't have a job. I had no money and I didn't know where to begin. So I packed up my things and I moved home overnight. And I woke up the next morning. So that night when I get home, I think I just made the best decision of my life. I'm going to be with my mom. I'm going to support her. And then the next morning, I wake up in my childhood bedroom with like an NSYNC poster on the wall. And I'm like, oh, I think I just made the worst decision of my life. So I didn't know what to do. My father is a pastor in East Los Angeles, and I took a part-time job at the church, and I was just doing whatever I could to make it happen. And it was during that time that my long-term boyfriend, my high school sweetheart, had said he wanted to propose to make sure that my mom was at our wedding. And so he proposed, and 3 months later, we were married. But in that three-month time frame where I was just trying a bunch of different things and just reading on the internet and trying to find a vehicle for a creative outlet, as the same time trying to satiate this desire to matter and do something with purpose, was when it came time for me to book a photographer for my wedding, I got immediately sucked into the world of photography. Yeah. And at this point in time, I did not have a camera. I didn't know which way was up. And I just got this idea, Ken, I want to be a photographer. I didn't have a camera. And I made the declaration that that was something I wanted to do.
Wow. Okay. Now, this is fascinating. And I don't mind if I'm digging and there's nothing there, but I gotta dig. So
great,
young Jasmine, were you artistic, very creative person? I think I know the answer to this, but I'm asking anyway.
Okay, well, what's the what do you think the answer is?
I think you were a very creative person.
You know what, Ken?
Creative thinker? I don't mind if I'm wrong. So, I don't mind.
No. I don't mind if you're wrong, and I don't think that there's a right here. I try to be I have like a high level of self-awareness, so I don't want to look back and be like, I was a rather precocious child. I was the child who had...
Right.
I don't want to say that, you know? So I was homeschooled. My parents have 5 children, and my mom schooled all of us. And when you're homeschooling that many children and you have no money,
yeah.
My father was a sole breadwinner, and he cleaned septic tanks, and he worked at Big Five, and he cut trees on the weekends, anything to put food on the table. It was a really rough financial time. So my mom didn't even have money to buy books to educate us. So right. My mom would dumpster dive behind elementary schools at the end of the school year. And what she would do is she would get the discarded books, and because they were missing sections of the book, she would get 4 or 5 books and then reassemble 1 textbook.
Yeah.
By the culmination of all 5. So
wow.
I think in a way, it's like the hood version of being creative. I think I can identify with that. But I wasn't the child who like wrote poetry or painted or developed film.
I get that. So I said artistic, and that led you one direction. I'm saying, were you a kid that had pretty strong imagination? Did you appreciate the aesthetic? I'm just curious. Do you recall that even as a teenager?
No, not at all. And you know... And it's still something, it's crazy that as an adult that has mapped with me is I have a very hard time seeing something that doesn't exist. And so if you were to ask me in my 20s, in my early 30s, if I could imagine where I was now with the business I have now,
yeah.
I couldn't even fathom it. I can't even fathom
right.
where life has taken me.
But you acknowledge that you are very creative now.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I believe that it was something that was dormant. I believe that it was a lump of coal. And over time, when I started giving myself the permission to start excavating and to start shaping away, that there was a diamond. But here's the thing, Ken. I believe that a diamond exists in every single
human being. Absolutely right. Just waiting to be discovered. So here's the deal.
100%.
Something intrigues you. Okay. Back to the story. Something intrigues you. As you're trying to pick out a wedding photographer, you don't even have a camera. I want to fast forward. You at some point get a camera, and when you begin to look through that lens, what happens?
So we get married at the end of September, and I get a letter from UCLA Law School in November stating that I have to go back to reclaim my scholarship and I need to make the declaration. And I sat at the dinner table and I cried into a plate of penne pasta. And I told my brand new husband, God bless him, I said, you know, I don't want to go back. I'm so miserable there. And he said, I would rather see you fail at something you love than succeed at something you hate.
Yes.
And he's like, so what do you want to do?
Good man.
And underneath, I didn't have the courage to come out and say it. And I looked across the table and I said, I want to be a photographer. And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
You don't have a camera. And I was like, I know. But if I just get a camera, like, I think it'd work. That Christmas, he got a camera that's the equivalent of what you could buy at Best Buy. So nothing fancy. It's like a prosumer camera. And we gave myself a year. What would it look like for a year to explore without pressure? So I still had a job and I had a camera and I waited a year. I can go back and get my scholarship a year later. So that's what we decided. I said, I'm going to wait to go back to law school and I'm going to see if I could start a business. And I started a blog and I journaled a new lens that I got, the journey, the mistakes I made, where I went out to dinner. And if you could believe it, Ken, people found the blog. And even though I wasn't the best photographer, people became connected to the journey.
Yep.
And they were less fixated on the art, but focusing on the artist who created the art. And that's where I've just benchmarked for so many years teaching business owners now that building a brand doesn't come with money or typography or a website or colors or fonts. Building a brand is an experience that you create emotionally with people who are invested in who you are and your business success.
Yeah, so true. I love that. So you just got started. And here's the deal. If I kind of know your journey. I know your sister. I've actually known your sister, your twin sister, a lot longer than I've known you. But if I'm not mistaken, you really became a successful photographer as not just a blogger. You were pretty successful at that, correct? At photography?
Correct. So I shot my very first wedding in 2007, and by 2009, I was voted one of the top 10 wedding photographers in the world.
That's right.
And then the year after, one of the most influential photographers, and the year after, one of the most socially influential photographers. So what was happening was that people became invested in the building of a business.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of people with resistance around the thing that I was doing. So just imagine, just like in any industry, you decide to do something and you realize that ingenuity is birthed out of lack of resources. Yeah. So I had no money. I had a camera, but I didn't have any lenses. I didn't have any memory cards. I was renting all of that as it came. I was very open about the journey on my blog. And then you have other established photographers who had built up resentment that they had done the traditional thing, gone to school, have portfolios, fancy cars. And then there's somebody who comes in and says, I really don't know what I'm doing, but I'm creating demand based on personality and grit and storytelling. And that rubbed people the wrong way. But I started sharing what I knew. I started teaching photographers how to build better businesses. And then slowly thereafter, year after year, my circles started expanding. So then creative entrepreneurs, and then product-based entrepreneurs, and service-based entrepreneurs. And since then, there have been multiple iterations of the business, but now I stand to empower small business owners to believe that the impossible is possible, going back and hearkening on the very things that I learned in 2007 and 2008. Those principles still apply today, but the best news is that they're magnified because social media has come around and really offered platforms that didn't exist a decade ago.
Oh, yeah. And you have a huge following. You're making tremendous impact. And all because you decided to start and then you stayed with it. So I want to spend a few minutes, and this is so easy for you. You can do this with your eyes closed. But I want to go back to some of the lessons about the head and heart. There's a wrestling match for people with the head and the heart. I know this from taking callers every day. And they know they should start something. And they really want to do it. And I think they kind of believe, but then there's all these extenuating circumstances, maybe somebody's opinion, maybe I don't have a lot of equipment, like Jasmine didn't have a lot of equipment, and there's so many things that hold them back from starting. And one of the things that I find, I want you to comment on this, is that people feel like they need to have so much more to start than they actually need. You just illustrated, you had nothing. You had a camera. So talk about this myth of how much we need, how much experience we got to have to actually start.
Well, the beautiful response and the not so beautiful response is that that never goes away.
Right.
Because even when I acquired the lenses and the memory cards and the websites, there was always the next iteration. If you continue to grow, you will sit in a perpetual state of uncertainty and unknowing.
Yeah.
So if you don't embrace it to start, you will never advance. And then you understand that every wave, it feels like a tidal wave, that every day you will be presented with a problem you've never faced before.
Yep.
So to say that you have to have certain things to get started, I'm like, oh, you're already behind the curve because you will never have enough. You will never feel like enough. Yep. And there'll always be people to have an opinion. I've come to learn, especially early in my career, was that people will always have an opinion of you. If you decide to sit on the couch or go on a run, if you decide to start a business or not start a business, if you decide to stand on the corner and preach, or if you decide to stay at home, they are going to have an opinion of you anyway. So if people are going to have an opinion, if they're going to shed doubt or shed fear into your life anyway, regardless of what you choose, then you should choose the thing that gives you life, understanding that not everybody will support you. But your objective is to stand first and foremost as a testament to your purpose, why you were put on this earth, to share your unique skill, and then show others what is possible as a result.
Yeah, so good. So once you get out there and you begin to start, and you begin to just put one foot in front of the other, talk about what happens. What happens to the human spirit, the mind and the heart, when we actually say, all right, I don't have a lot, but I'm going anyway. I'm not going to sit on the couch anymore. I'm going after it. What happens over time?
Well, first and foremost, you're broken again and again and again and again. And the people who you see on the front lines, on stages, in the front row, accolades, are the people who just decided, I'm not going to stop getting up.
Yep.
So if you don't have the stomach to be knocked down and stand up again, then you don't want the thing that you want bad enough. So when you say, I am deciding to become a teacher, a photographer, a dog walker, or a jewelry maker, then you must first embrace, before anything else, is that you're going to get knocked down again and again and again. And that is the process. That is the game. The people who stand at the front or at the top simply refuse to stop getting up. But what I've learned over time is that you have that internal saboteur, your imposter syndrome. And the thing that I've learned is to, number one, ask myself every time I walk from the warehouse to the White House one day, why not me? That somebody's going to be in there. Why not me? And there's three M's that I've come to identify. And I learned this lesson from a copywriter whose name, it slips my mind right now, but if I have the opportunity to remember it. But it's three M's. Number one, it'll be the message. That even if I say the same thing that somebody has said, or 1,000 people have said it 1,000 times over, that the messenger is different. Mm. That Ken, you could say something, and I could say it, and somebody needs to hear it differently.
That's
from
right.
each of us.
That's exactly
but let's
right.
just say, Ken, let's just say that there's listeners right now who are saying, you know, Jasmine and Ken are saying the same thing, and I'm hearing it the same way. Well, then it becomes the medium. Ken, you're great on television, on radio, and I might be better perhaps writing, or maybe I might be better at creating an Instagram reel. I don't know, but we have different mediums yeah. that can help differentiate us. So even if you think somebody has more, done more, been more, yeah. they're more qualified, more educated, they should be there. Guess what? Somebody needs to hear it from you, and they need to hear it in a specific way. And the medium in which you share it was specifically tailored for them. So continue to get up every single day and stand in your purpose.
I love that. There's three. You just mentioned the imposter syndrome, which is the new fancy way of saying doubt. We talk about fear, doubt, and pride a lot on the show. I'm writing about it extensively. I think they're the three just gigantic enemies that never leave us. They never leave us. We can overcome them, but we never get rid of them. I'm just curious from your journey, is there a specific fear that may have been bigger for you, a little bit bigger of a monster than other fears?
You know, I don't know if you're familiar with the Enneagram.
Oh,
my
sure.
Enneagram is.
Oh,
okay,
yeah. So, Ian Cron's okay. a neighbor in the area here. I mean, we've had him on the show.
I just had Ian on my podcast. I'm obsessed with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
Obsessed. He's brilliant. He's brilliant. And, you know, it's like he kind of took. And the thing about Ian is that the way he speaks and the way he teaches yeah. is that he carries a scalpel of truth. He's not. He doesn't have a machete.
No.
He just slowly cuts away at you. And the next thing you know, like, you're bleeding out.
It's totally
like,
true.
How do you know me?
You should smoke cigars with him sometime. This is a 2-hour session where by the end of it, I'm completely just blown away by the guy. That's the best, is when you get outside of an interview with him and you hang out with the dude. He's dropping bombs when he doesn't even know he's dropping bombs. But yeah,
okay.
I'm familiar.
So
him.
One, I'm low key jealous.
I know,
so we'll
I know.
Keep that for
if
another
you get
day.
To Nashville, we'll all do a hang. We'll make it happen.
So if I bribe you, with cigars, maybe.
Done. Like you don't even have to do it. I'm just gonna tell Ian, I'm gonna go, Ian, we gotta hang with Jasmine. It'll be great.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah.
So I'm an Enneagram 3 Wing 4. And so we believe that people value us in direct proportion to the value that we provide for others.
Ding ding ding.
And so as a result, my greatest fear is that I don't matter if I'm not bringing value.
Yep.
And that, you know, so and then all of a sudden you put yourself in a perpetual state of give, and then you want to be seen.
Yeah.
And if you're not seen, you feel as if you don't matter. So that reoccurring fear of like really separating myself, that I myself, by myself, regardless if I'm giving, have some sort of value to give to the world, and that I matter and the small things that I'm doing really do matter.
Yeah, I get it. I'm a 3 Wing 4. It's absolutely right. And that
We
got to know those big fears. You know, it's yep. so important. Okay, let's talk about pride. This is, you know, one of the things that I see, again, I get this, you know, incredible privilege. You get to talk to real men and women every day on the phone. And the big voice of pride is, I don't want to ask for help. We feel like the question, will you help me, is so leechy and gross. But if it's asked the right way, you'd be blown away by how people are willing to help you. So that's a big one. Is there some type of a voice of a pride or maybe a specific doubt? I just want to let you teach a little bit that you face or you did face and you were able to push through it and learn so much from it.
You know, I don't know if it's because I grew up really poor. I don't know if it grew up because I'm brown. I can't really identify why. But into adulthood, I mean, I'm talking about rather recently, Ken, is that finally, by blessings, have gotten to a place and a space in my life where there's financial freedom in a way I've never experienced in my life. And so for me, it's not an issue of pride as much as it is an issue of belonging. So for instance, my husband and I went on a trip and I walk into a hotel and I got out of the car and I didn't realize, Ken, I kept my head down and my eyes down and I wanted to dart straight through the lobby and I just wanted to get to the room. And my husband pulled me on my shoulder and he put his fingers under my chin and he lifted my face and he says, when you walk into any room, you must act like you belong because you do and people will treat you that way. And so I think that that has been such a shift in a professional capacity that every room I walk in, you know, a boardroom or anywhere, I need to hold my head up high because people will give you what you think of yourself. And I think that that's kind of been a thing. And as a result of that, to piggyback, it's I walk with my emotional or even physical head down. And when it comes to asking for help, it's just something that I wouldn't do. I believe that if I gave and gave and gave to somebody, that they would finally say, you know what, Jasmine, what do you need?
No.
And it never happened that way. It never happened that way. You have to ask for something you want.
I got to tell you, one big truth for me, I mean, I was 33 sitting on my back porch in Atlanta, Georgia, 2 years into the chase of broadcasting, nothing's happening, and I'm having a pity party, and I'm the only person there. And I realized that nobody's sitting around thinking about how they can help Ken Coleman. Like, nobody woke up today went, that Ken Coleman guy, I think he has maybe some potential. Maybe I'm going to call him up and give him a crazy opportunity. You know, everybody else has got their own journey, and they're all thinking about their own deal. And so we got to ask. But I like what you said there about belonging. That's actually a really positive side of pride, to have pride in who you are and your unique makeup. I love your husband's move. Get your chin up, shine bright. I love that. That's really, really good. Okay, let's shift here. So now we know that you are much more than an artist through a camera. You are really a great coach. You're more than an influencer. I don't even like that word anymore because now it's taken on this cheap connotation. You are making things happen. You've got an incredible business. You're coaching people, sometimes directly, sometimes indirectly on Instagram. What do you love most now about what you do? If you had to single something out, I know that's hard because you love all aspects of your work, but I'm just curious, what's the thing you enjoy the most about what you do now?
Igniting belief.
Oh,
you can actually see the shift in somebody when they go from, I have a question. And so on the inside of Social Curator, my husband and I are co-founders of Social Curator, and we empower small business owners to build a brand and market on social media. And so that's where I, by and large, do group coaching, and people come on. And they will ask a question, but our methodology to how we coach is there's always a question that's a frontward-facing veneer of the underlying question. And you could see that when you start tapping at the underlying question, you see a shift or you see a flicker in somebody's belief. And when you ignite belief, game over.
So
the hardest thing is not whether or not your business is going to be successful. It's not whether or not you believe in your capacity to succeed. It's truly, do you believe you can do it? And the minute that you make that belief concrete and gold, game over. And so to me, when I see somebody shift their belief, I also know it's a vehicle for income. And what I have experienced in my family is that income is a gateway to change legacy and to change families, and to give somebody the freedom to make decisions to grow in ways that they just didn't have the capacity. So in my mind, it's belief leading to prosperity on the back of hard work and understanding that you're here on this earth to do something specific.
Yeah. You touched on this earlier, and I want to circle back to it, but this idea of getting started, it's not a one-time deal. I mean, here you are, very successful, more successful than ever. The future for you is incredibly bright, but you're always starting new things. Talk about how this is a cyclical thing. It's like every time you do something new, a new line of business, something else, you're getting started. Talk about the success that comes from learning how to always be starting something.
So my, like I had mentioned, my husband and I are co-founders. And when I started my photography career, I saw that there was a need for education. So I started doing consulting and educating one-on-one. And then I started realizing that there's a scalable market. So then I moved into creating online courses. And as a result of the online courses, I started realizing that people needed continuing support. And so then I then pivoted and created a membership. And the thing that I realized about the membership was that people actually needed technological support that innovated with them and stayed with them and stayed sticky along the web. So then, unbeknownst to me, I was creating a tech company. And in every iteration, from photography to consulting to coaching to course creating to membership to a SaaS company, I had no idea what I was doing. But all I knew was that if I wanted things to change, I must change. Yeah. I think it's Einstein who said insanity, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome. And so yesterday, my husband and I, we have a tech team in Burbank, California, which is just north of Los Angeles. And we go there and we visit our tech team and we talk about development. And I have to tell you, just real talk. I sat in the car and I told my husband, I said, I feel like I swallowed an anvil. I feel heavy. Yeah. My head feels cloudy. I feel like there's a migraine coming up. And I'm just wondering if this, a particular thing that we want to build, is the right thing we should do. And my husband, and Ken, you'll just, I mean, clearly every story revolves around my husband's brilliance, but he said, there's no such thing as wrong or right. We're making a decision and we must go through it 100%. And if at the end of it, we realize it wasn't what we should have done, it wasn't right or wrong, we learned something and this is going to be the thing to lead us to the next thing. And if we look back at our course together as business owners, that has only ever been the case. Our deepest failures were the breakthroughs to our greatest successes. Yeah. So he said, buckle up. It's not easy, but it's worth it.
It absolutely is.
I was just like, you know.
He's right. Well, I love that. I love that you've got that cheerleader and a coach as well in the hubs. Let me ask you to talk about failure because you just mentioned it. We've been talking about starting. And you mentioned this early on, like you're going to be broken the way you said it. You said you're going to be broken and that's failure. Mm-hmm. Does it sting as bad as people think it stings, in your opinion, failure?
No.
I don't think so either. And I know that's tough because it's like, I've never even asked it that way before, but I've been through some massive failures. And I think when I look back on it, it's kind of like, it stung, but not as bad as I thought. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
Because it's always worse in our mind.
Yep.
I think Bob Goff said something along the lines like, I thank God that the worst case scenarios were never as bad as I imagined.
Yes.
And so it's not as if we approach a new venture, a business, starting a passion or hobby. It's not as if we enter expecting anything on the outcome. Like, we don't know what we expect, but we do know what failure looks like. Yeah. And we imagine this terrible situation. And what happens is, you know what? Maybe it didn't turn out in the optimal outcome, but it sure as heck was not as bad as we imagined.
Yep. So true. Mm-mm. All right, this is fun. I'm a son of a preacher man. You're the daughter of a preacher man. So I want to tee you up to preach.
Oh, snap. I don't know if I can do my daddy right.
No pressure. I just mean, I want you to just talk to my audience. And we've got people out there that are about to start. They've been thinking about it. They're edging their toe up to the edge. It's terrifying. You and I certainly understand that. We've got people who've just started recently. They're in those early days, first couple of steps. And you have people that started not too very long ago, and they're kind of in that mile too. Nobody's at the starting line cheering them on anymore. The applause has faded. They're a couple miles out. You know what I'm talking about.
I do.
I want you to just talk to their hearts right now. What do they need to hear?
Well, I'm going to share what I needed to hear multiple times in my career, and I needed to hear it again and again until I believed it as truth with a capital T. And it's you are enough. You wouldn't have been given the thought or the desire to do the thing you wanted to do if it wasn't at all as part of a divine plan and calling upon your life. So to release yourself from the pressure of immediately monetizing the thing that brings you joy and instead say, I'm going to learn something that is going to lead me to the thing I need and want to do, even if it looks different than what I imagine it to be today. So every morning you ask yourself, why not me? And understand that what you have right now is everything you need to get to where you want to go, because there are people doing more with less. And if they are proof of what is possible, there is no excuse for you not to pursue the same journey with excellence, with delight, and with a celebration of the journey without expectation of the outcome or the destination.
Wow. Amen and amen is all that needs to be said. Nothing needs to be added to that. It's so good. She is Jasmine Starr. She is a force of nature. You got to check her out on Instagram. I got to tell you, I have no rhythm, and everybody in the control room knows this. My family knows this. The amount of cool videos you do, like reels, and I'm guessing you're on TikTok as well, that have good content in them, but they're all choreographed. They got the music. I mean, folks, she's just got the swag. So check her out, Instagram and TikTok, because she really does deliver a lot of great content in these entertaining things. And if I tried to do that, I would look completely ridiculous. So you got to know your lane, and she knows her lane, and it's a great lane. Jasmine, you're amazing. I'm glad to call you friend, and I really appreciate you hanging out with us. Our audience is so much better for you dispensing some wisdom on getting started. Thank you.
Thank you. It's an honor and privilege. I appreciate you, Ken.
There you have it. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of the Jasmine Star Show. If you enjoyed this episode and you don't want to miss another one, y'all, take 3 seconds and subscribe to this podcast from wherever you are tuning in from today. Those subscriptions, they really help us a ton. This will also ensure, like, you help me and then we help you. We all, like, help me help you. This is going to ensure that you're going to get notified for all future episodes. And y'all know that makes my heart forever grateful. Thank you again for listening, and I will talk to you soon.